I think for many years, we may have said liberal arts, that's not as important. I'd actually say liberal arts probably super important because it builds a lot of those behavioral skills and capabilities that are really what's going to bring the human to roles. I think when you consider automation, anything that really has a lot of data could probably be AI automated. But when you think of judgment, creativity, innovation unlocks, interpersonal capabilities, communication skills, a lot of those are deeply human, and those are areas where we all need to lean into.
Hello, and welcome back to Where AI Works, conversations at the intersection of AI and industry, brought to you by Wharton in collaboration with Accenture. I'm your host, Matthew Bidwell. I'm a professor of management, faculty co-director of the Wharton People Analytics Initiative, and faculty director of Wharton's CHRO program. It's our goal on this podcast to cut through the noise and try and deliver some actionable insights for business leaders about where AI is going. We'll try and combine some cutting-edge research with real-world case studies. Things are changing fast, so let's get started. AI isn't just changing the tasks that people do. As it changes tasks, it ends up changing jobs. And as we change jobs, we have to think about what kind of skills people are going to need in the future. We also have to think about what that then means for their career paths, mobility, and so on. When you have companies with a big frontline workforce, that means that the stakes are really high. It creates new opportunities for managing people as well, as we think about how AI can be used to help empower people of the workforce, push decisions down towards them, and so on and so forth. So we really need to understand what's coming and how we prepare for it. In doing so, we thought it would be great to talk to the people who manage, according to Wikipedia, more people than any other private sector organization. So I'm really excited today to have with me the Chief People Officer at Walmart, Donna Morris, to talk through how AI is being implemented at Walmart. Donna, welcome to Where AI Works.
Thanks for having us. Really appreciate it.
So I was wondering, to kick things off, maybe you could just tell us a little bit about yourself, what you're doing, and just very big picture, what's Walmart's philosophy when it comes to AI?
Yeah. So first and foremost, I'm the Chief People Officer at Walmart. What is the Chief People Officer? We're really here to make sure that we're able to attract, develop, reward, retain, and build a great workforce to serve our customers and our members. We have more than 2.1 million associates that work for us across the markets in which we operate. 1.6 million of those associates work here in the United States. We believe that our workforce will continue to be people-led, tech-powered. We're going to unlock the potential that our people bring to the job by leveraging AI tools and technologies and, frankly, platforms to better serve our customers, for our associates to work more effectively. As opposed to thinking of this as going into a dark period, we actually look at it as an opportunity to really bring our workforce along with us. And so we're focused on equipping our workforce with the skills that they need for the future.
I want to talk a little bit about what AI means for you. This kind of, you talk about AI at scale, nobody has your scale. When we talk about this people-led, tech-powered idea, what does that mean for a frontline employee on a typical day? I'm curious what you're experiencing so far in implementing AI, where you've been able to find that it's able to make a difference.
Well, let me start by saying AI is being living in our applications and how we actually think about ways of working for many years. I think a nuance would be agentic AI. And when we think of that, that's newer. How does that come to life in a store? The next best action that somebody would do that was perhaps a personal shopper in our store, they're picking items for online pickup and delivery, would be driven by virtue of AI. The ability for a frontline associate to translate something from their preferred language or their first language to English and or to Spanish, that's driven by AI. The ability for an associate to actually get personalized recommendations and then real-time learning would actually be driven by an AI platform. So there's lots of ways for this to, I'll call it, augment some of the work of our frontline workforce. But I think the reality is that when we talk about AI and changing jobs, a lot of those jobs that we're talking about are not frontline workers. They're jobs that have people in office roles or campus roles. And so the way I like to look at it is we want to equip all of our workforce with AI skills and capabilities, but the roles that are changing at the fastest rate would be roles that are closest to the desk, honestly. And frontline associates are not closest to the desk. They're ones that are closest to our customers and members. And yes, their jobs are evolving, but they're not going to change as significantly as those that work in an office.
That makes sense. You said you don't see this as some sort of dark period that we're going into, which is very nice for all of us to hear. Presumably some of those people in office roles, that is the fear that a lot of people have, that AI is largely going to be used to replace people and what's going to happen to my job. How are you thinking about that? Kind of on the one hand, we want to increase productivity. On the other hand, what we hear is that most of the value from AI may be actually in enabling people to do things they couldn't do before rather than just replace them. How do you think about how those roles are changing, how you balance those two and so on?
We think of it a few ways. One is there'll be roles that will evolve by virtue of AI. When I say evolve, they'll look different because you're going to be able to use AI to do some of the mundane, some of the tasks that were more manual and or that frankly didn't require a lot of judgment and or creativity or innovation. So there'll be jobs that will evolve. There'll be jobs that will emerge. So agent builders, we never had agent builders. Now we have agent builders. So there'll be new jobs. And there will be some jobs that will go away. I think our big focus is how do we bring people along on that journey? And that means we need to equip individuals with the skills and capabilities. We have a very high percentage of our workforce that is using AI on a daily basis. That's great. What we'd like to have is all of our associates using AI on a daily basis. And to do that, we need to equip them. So we've announced two forms of certifications, one with Google, one that we're developing with OpenAI. Our intentions there is we want to have a very large, one of the largest workforces, if not the largest workforce, with associates that are skilled and equipped to actually use AI as part of their work. I might be dating myself, but when I think of when I first went to university or college, as people call it often here, is I had to go to the library to do a lot of my studying. Mine were manual books. I had to use the Dewey Decimal System. I probably sound like I'm ancient, but I look at students today and they can, on their fingertips or in their pocket, have a partner in terms of learning. And that's similar when you think about the workplace. Jobs are going to change. Jobs have continued to change. However, what will be the plus one for an associate will probably be agentic. And that's not a bad thing as long as we bring people along on that journey.
I mean, one of the things that I just want to come back to, because I thought it was a really interesting thing that you were talking about, which is that now as somebody fulfilling an e-commerce order, we have AI telling you where to go next and so on. You know, we've seen this in a number of other areas, this idea that some of the supervision now is being done by AI, that rather than going to a manager for directions, I get it from the system. What's your sense of how people are feeling about that and what it takes to bring them along? Do you think for a lot of people, actually, it's a relief to be able to kind of just be a little more arm's length from people? Or is there some sense of now I'm kind of, you know, working for the system?
I actually have a different view. I feel like now managers can actually manage people. So as opposed to being a manager that is giving out the tasks of the day, it's pretty uplifting to be the manager that can actually spend time with an associate getting to know what they're doing really well and or getting to know areas that they need support or help and or getting to know the customers really well and getting to see what's working in their store or working in their club. So what we're hearing from our associates is that they're actually able to have more real human interactions because AI is taking out some of the work that was either manual and or very task-driven. And that task-driven becomes very transactional. So to have something to automate the transactions isn't a bad thing, provided that the real human elements are actually picked up by people. And so we would anticipate that discussions around somebody's feedback or performance is a very people-driven discussion, whereby my next task or action, that being given to me in an automated fashion, isn't actually a bad thing.
So you talked about bringing people along with you, that jobs are changing, we need to start changing the skills that people have. What are you finding are the key skills that you need to provide people with? I mean, I think it's a big question a lot of people have, which is, we hear a lot about people need new skills, but what are they? Are you starting to identify particular skills, particular training programs, things like that, that are actually helpful in getting people to work more effectively in this AI-driven world?
Yeah, great question. So let's set aside the AI skills. We could almost say that those are sort of harder skills or very specific skills. I think it's some of the softer skills that we really need to lean into. So when you think about it, communication skills, super important. Learning agility, people who actually thrive in environments where they're continuing to learn, becomes very, very important. People who are highly adaptable, so they're open to different ways of working as agentic changes their ways of working, super important. I think people who embrace the opportunity to not only change and learn and adapt, but basically grow as a result of this, I think that will end up being really, really important. And then I think ultimately some of the people skills, such as interpersonal skills and capabilities, moving away from hiding behind screens, but actually having to have people interaction, that's going to be super important. So, you know, I think for many years, we may have said liberal arts, that's not as important. I'd actually say, well, actually, liberal arts probably super important because it builds a lot of those behavioral skills and capabilities that are really what's going to bring the human to roles. I think when you consider automation, anything that really has a lot of data could probably be AI automated. But when you think of judgment, creativity, innovation unlocks, interpersonal capabilities, communication skills, a lot of those are deeply human. And those are areas where we all need to lean into.
That's really interesting. I mean, I do feel like teaching at a university, we don't yet have really good answers to what we should be teaching to kind of be most helpful to our graduates. And it seems like you have some sense of that. You know, we often talk about this, hire for attitude, train for skill. Some of them sound like more of the things kind of how we change the way that we screen people. Is that what you're thinking? Or do you think there are also ways that we can actually be training people better within organizations to infuse those kinds of attitudes and behaviors in them?
Well, I think we have to do both. And certainly at a company of our size and scale, we've got to do both. We've always believed in hiring for fit was really important. And a lot of that fit connects back to our purpose and values, because we felt somebody was going to join us into a job, they're likely going to have many, many other jobs. 75% of our store managers start in the front line. So what they learned when they first came is very different than what they end up doing as a store manager. But what's consistent is that they align with our purpose. So they're really focused on service. They're somebody that probably continues to learn. They're somebody that has a high bar of integrity. There's somebody that clearly is intellectually curious, wants to actually work with other people. So all of those are very consistent, and you can assess for a lot of those skills and capabilities. We do that today. Is a person really customer-focused, customer-centric? That continues to be really, really important for us. And I think generally it goes back to what is really the core strategy of a business. For our business, it's to serve other people. And I think the best people to serve people are people. So that's why, you know, I have a lot of confidence in the fact that we will continue to be a very large employer, even though jobs will change, even though we will expect our associates to lean into learning AI and equipping themselves to be capable to work in a different environment in the future.
And so again, as we talk about those kind of leaning into learning, for an employer of your scale, how do you deploy kind of training programs? Is this mainly online? How do you think about actually upgrading the skills? Because I mean, I know so many employers are talking about this kind of, as we take work out, we want to redeploy people to the places where they can be more valuable. That means new skills. That's a big exercise. How do you think about actually rolling those sorts of programs out?
Well, I think our first is actually equipping people with those AI skills and capabilities. And that actually can be done with AI. You know, they're online learning that's based on the role and the prototype of an individual in a particular function today, but building them skills and capabilities that they can leverage in the future for other jobs. we've had core pathways for many years. We've, you know, continued to change, for instance, our supply chain, which meant that we have fewer people working in our supply chain today than we did a number of years ago. However, our workforce is still 2.1 million people because we have more drivers today than we did in the past. We have more people who work in our health and wellness business than we did in the past. We have more people who work in maintenance roles today than we did in the past. And all of those were learning pathways. And so my message here is, I think it's incumbent upon businesses and organizations, and I realize not all are of the same size and scale, but to identify areas and pathways of opportunity for their individuals so that they can start equipping their associates to lean into learning towards pathways that will grow in the future.
That makes a lot of sense, I think, as we think about that. I mean, one of the questions that I have is how those pathways change as well. And the story that everybody's telling, and there's some evidence for it, is that entry-level roles are disappearing. So particularly when you think about your office space, your desk-based population, there are a lot of concerns and some evidence that companies are saying, we don't need the entry-level people anymore because AI can do all of that. How then does that change the pathways and how we think about people learning jobs if some of the kind of, let's face it, more basic work that we used to do is disappearing, even though that more basic work is the work that actually used to be useful for us in terms of kind of building the judgment, building the experience that would then help us do more complex work?
So I think I'd approach that two ways. One is, I don't think all early career roles are disappearing. I think that right now there's challenges to reimagine what early career roles look like. If I was to take a contrarian viewpoint, I would say that it's some of those early career individuals that actually probably come to workplaces more equipped to use AI by virtue of how they're learning and frankly working and living their lives today. You know, lots of articles, lots of research now showing that who do they go to for guidance or advice or insights might very well be one of those LLMs. So I'd say, let's not rule out that there's going to be lots of opportunities for people early career, but it might look different. You know, when I think of retail, I think of why are they not starting in our stores and our clubs? That's really what they have to learn. We're a business that's all about our customers and our members. And so as opposed to the traditional path of I go to school, I get higher education, the first place I go is into an office role. I like to reimagine that maybe it's into a club or it's a store and you're learning and then you actually have built more awareness of the business and you can go back into the core area whereby you've graduated, whether that be marketing or communications or finance or human resources, et cetera. So I think that's one approach to take. I think another approach to take is there will be new jobs that will emerge. And I'll use an agent builder as an example. What we're finding is the agent builders come from a great array of backgrounds and experiences, including those that are pretty early out of school. Now, why is that? Well, they may or may not have spent some time gaming. They may or may not have a lot of questions. They may or may not have an attitude in terms of approaching things that might help them build prompts. It might help them actually design what an agent looks like. So what I would say is early career, don't be stuck on what you think that destination role is. Be open once again to the fact that you've demonstrated a foundation of learning. And if you can bring that learning to a new organization, then it could be applied in a lot of different ways. Most of us are in jobs that we did not start in right out of school. And we learned, to your great point, because we were given a lot of jobs and tasks to do. Not all of them contributed to the jobs that we have today. Most of the things that contributed to us were interpersonal based, and they were based on relationships and working with other people. So what I would say is early career jobs that can expose people to working in teams and or with other people can be a great unlock for many pathways.
Interesting. So those kind of early career jobs may well be changing, but we're still getting a lot of value in kind of different pathways. You mentioned the AI agent builder. Tell me a bit more about that role. Where are you deploying them? Is it like a central group? Are they kind of dispersed around the organization? And how are you finding people for these jobs?
Great question. Originally, we started in one of our organizations. It was our merchandising organization where we actually buy products. Super important, probably one of the most important jobs for us, given we're a retailer. We have since moved that organization into our technology team. And why we're doing that is we're building agentic platforms. And so we want the super agents or the key agents to be actually embedded as part of those platforms. Where are we finding those individuals? It's an array. We've got all the way from people who are pretty early career to individuals that have worked with us for 30 years. They come from tech jobs. We've got a lawyer that's in that team. We've got somebody who started in finance. We have a few individuals that came from merchandising. What's consistent across all of those individuals is intellectual curiosity, really focused on learning, highly adaptable, individuals that, frankly, a lot of them do game. So means that logically, they just enjoy trying to build something and or create something or challenge assumptions on things. They tend to be very great questioners, so they build great questions. And so today we've got a good sized group, and we expect that we'll have more in the future. Where will they be located in the future? I would anticipate over time some of those agent builders will get proximate to the actual teams that they're building agents for, which is where they started to begin with. So we're on a journey. We'll have to check with us to find out where all these agent builders are at.
And would it be fair to say that they're people who also have a depth of domain expertise? The examples you give makes it sound like it's people who like technology, but also people who know enough about the underlying business processes.
I think it's a mix. There are those that do, but sometimes it's great to have that, you know, fresh eye perspective that you actually don't know very much because you end up asking a lot of questions. And that can be highly effective in determining where you're going to deploy an agent or not.
Stepping back a bit, I'm kind of just curious about the broader transformation. And so we have all of these new technologies, new ways of working, potentially new career paths as well, opportunities, but also change. How do you think about managing the transformation process itself, kind of the almost the more emotional part of it, bringing people along, offering that optimism, but also reassurance? How are you going about managing those kind of interpersonal parts of what looks to be a really big transformation going on across all of our workplaces?
I think change management is highly dependent on communication. So if anything, it's making sure that you can answer as much as possible, even if it is you don't have the answers. So I think communication, transparency, being really open to individuals that I don't think any of us have a crystal ball for exactly what it's going to look like. And if we do, congrats. But we're still all building. We're still all seeing what the unlock is in terms of AI. And let's put it out there. AI in and of itself is an expensive pathway. And so we have to make sure that we're making decisions, all of us across enterprises, to decide where should that be deployed and where should that not be deployed. And that goes back to communication and transparency. I think we cannot be making promises. We can't be making promises of jobs are going to stay the same. They're not going to stay the same. We can't be making promises for exactly what the organizations will look like, but we can directionally set a tone. And what we're trying to do is directionally set the tone that we have been a big employer, will continue to be a big employer. We have always focused on equipping our workforce. We're going to continue to focus on equipping our workforce. We are going to have change. And as we know what those changes are, we're going to bring our people along on that journey and best equip them to be part of that journey ahead. And that's about all we can do right now. I think what individuals can do in workforces is they have to be adaptable. They have to be open to change and they have to be open to learning. And that's what we're expecting of our workforce for sure.
Wonderful. That's, I think, a great message for everybody to close on. So thank you so much, Donna, for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
So what did I learn from talking to Donna? I found it very interesting just to think about how an organization as large and diverse as Walmart is thinking about the myriad ways in which AI is going to affect jobs. And you see already the way that AI may have different impacts across different jobs, but it seems to be omnipresent everywhere. And we're likely to see only increases in its use. I thought it was interesting to think about what that means for skills and even who gets hired. This idea that in a time of turbulence and change and rapid change, these issues about adaptability become increasingly important. Maybe that is about liberal arts education. Somebody teaches in a business school. I have mixed feelings about that, obviously. But certainly, I think the idea of breadth in our background is something that's going to be very important, something that we should be thinking about. And I think this question of how, as organizations, we help inculcate those skills in people is something that's going to become more important. I guess one of the pieces that really resonated with me, maybe an obvious piece, is we don't know where we're going. And I think it's refreshing to hear from organizations that honesty. I always think that anybody who tells you how AI is going to affect work, that they know how it's going to affect work, is lying to you and probably themselves. Well, that's all for today. Thank you so much for spending your time with us. Please follow us so that you don't miss any of the upcoming episodes. Next time, I'm going to be talking to Paul Stathakopoulos, who's Vice President of Product for Global Focus Categories and International Cross-Border Trade at eBay. This has been Where AI Works, conversations at the intersection of AI and industry, brought to you by Wharton in collaboration with Accenture. I'm Matthew Bidwell. Thank you. And goodbye.